Live from New York City, it's The Gary Noel Show. And now, your host, Gary Noel.
Hi, everyone. I'm Gary Noel, back in New York City, live from our studio. And as of now, you can watch this program if you'd like to tune into it. I'm going to show you how in a moment. We're going to get, I've been out of town for a while, so I want to make sure which channel that you can watch today's program on. Anyhow, I have a lot to share with you today. We're going to start with something about tart cherries and how it impacts your brain. I have about 15 to 16 other important stories, and for all of you listening for the first time, and we have an enormous worldwide audience, this is the number one listened to progressive radio program on the planet. And we also post articles, hundreds of articles. I personally do all the posting. I post about, try to get around 50 articles a day on a wide variety of topics, and also videos that we stream, and things that bring us closer to understanding nature, animals, each other, trying to give you something to feel good about, positive inspirational information, as well as hard-hitting articles. Today, I'm going to give you a hard-hitting, original investigative reporting piece. It's going to be looking at the truth behind the attacks on Dr. Deepak Chopra by Wikipedia. Now, we have published almost 35 articles in the last year alone, just on Wikipedia, showing you that it is completely incompatible with truth. You shouldn't use it for anything unless it's, use it as an example. In college, in high school, teachers should use Wikipedia as an example of how corrupt a system is, because it's utterly corrupt, and we've proven it. In fact, I even have an inspector general of the Internal Revenue Service as a whistleblower registered me on proving it. So these are factual situations. Also, Google and Facebook. We're challenging all of them. So we're continuing today, but not with me. I've taken 20 individuals who themselves have been attacked and showing you that almost everything in the attacks are wrong and complete inaccurate. So that is important. Also today, I'm going to have you hear a clip from President Bill Clinton apologizing for decades of the U.S. government, the CIA, the Defense Department, and the National Security Agency intentionally using American citizens as human guinea pigs, frequently in poor neighborhoods and poor cities like St. Louis. Now, I have in my hand, and by the way, you can go to the Progressive Radio Network Facebook, and that's how you can watch the program. I was just informed. So, Progressive Radio Network Facebook, and you can watch. I have here an article. It's one of two, and this is called Human Guinea Pigs. It's a part of a medical genocide series I did. This was one of 58 cover stories. That's a lot of cover stories for national publication I did on medical genocide. And in here, this was the first article that showed the American government was using its own citizens to test drugs. And then other people picked up on this series and did it. Well, I'm going to show you that 5G is another one of these. Let's use it on the American public and not tell them all the toxic studies, 10,000 toxic studies that exist, and the tens of thousands of American scientists and worldwide scientists who have read those studies, written those studies, and say, don't use 5G. It is toxic. You will have a pandemic of environmental-related diseases and disorders. In that regard, this past Saturday, I joined a coalition. And I want to thank all of our audience who attended. You were the majority of the people there. Down on 12th Street and 7th Avenue, fighting 5G. We were there to demonstrate, but more importantly, we filmed it. I realized most of you couldn't be there, and especially since 90% of the people listening or watching this broadcast live around the world. So we filmed it. I took my professional film crew, Roland Marconi. Roland's been with me for 30 years, and we filmed it, and it's up now on YouTube, Gary and all YouTube, you'll see the demonstration. But last Thursday, we challenged the vaccines, mandatory vaccines, and the New York legislators who passed those legislational actions that deprive people from religious exemption. And we had a lot of ultra-Orthodox Jews who were there and who were very appreciative for we fighting on their behalf, because for religious reasons, they cannot vaccinate. And therefore, we protested, helping them. We have three lawsuits. One has been brought, was thrown out. We have three more. That was Robert F. Kennedy Jr.'s lawsuit. There are three more that will be filed over the next couple of weeks. We'll keep you in touch on what's happening. I'm coming up with some alternatives to what to do if your kid's going back to school shortly and you don't want to vaccinate. What are your options? There are a couple options. I'll share that in an in-depth discussion later on. But we filmed that. We filmed the demonstrations and the information given. That is up on YouTube. And plus my lecture yesterday out in Huntington, Long Island. It was a packed house, standing room only. I managed to get 12 people to squeeze inside the door and stand, but at least they got to watch the documentary, which was well received. And then I did a hour and a half lecture indoors, and then there was we had to give up the theater. We filmed that, and then we went outdoors, and I did another hour and a half outdoors. So I lectured for 3 hours. We filmed all that. Roland is editing that as we speak. That's Roland Marconi, and he himself is a very talented documentarian. And that will be posted this week. The awards presentation and the premiere of another documentary at the Thalia Theater, the Symphony Space, we filmed that, including Leonard Lopate's questions to me and my answers. That was rather interesting. If you're expecting a feel-good discussion, that it wasn't, because clearly Leonard could have done his homework. It sounded like he was talking from reading Wikipedia, but that's all right. I don't expect everyone from VAI to always be properly prepared, including Bertolt Reimers. My God, Bertolt, the next time you're going to give an award out, have someone write a script for you. Before he dies, we want to give Gary a award. Here, Gary. Jesus, man. I appreciate the award, and I appreciate the concept behind it. And it's all right. Not everyone's a professional presenter. So we've got a lot to share today. And so let's go at it. And again, you can watch for the first time in, three or four months by going to the Progressive Radio Network Facebook, and you can watch it. Tart cherry juice is very important for your brain. Now, we knew it was good for helping turn off inflammation in your joints, absolutely. But according to the University of Delaware, in a brand new study just out today, Montmorency tart cherry juice, that's not regular cherry juice, has been good for gout sufferers. In fact, one of the finest human beings I've ever met in my life, one of the best broadcasters, and the most intellectually savvy overall person, and he speaks 32 languages, Barry Farber, called me one Saturday and said, I'm on the middle of my kitchen floor. I can't get up. My toe is swollen. My pain is all up and down my leg. What can I do? So I said, well, we got to get you some tart cherry juice and pantothenic acid. And I gave a few other things. He took it. It completely relieved his gout. I said, now here's the lesson. Go vegan. He did go vegan. He's been healthy and is in his late 80s or early 90s, still broadcasting, by the way. So gout and pain in your toes or your joints, this helps. Athletes for exercise recovery, that really helps. And those seeking a good night's sleep, yes. It also has melatonin in it. So the idea is that you have a polyphenol-rich beverage. You can buy the concentrate, and you get more for your money when you buy the concentrate, and that helps improve cognitive performance, especially over the age of 50. And in a new study published in the journal Food and Function, researchers at the University of Delaware found daily intake of Montmorency tart cherry juice improved memory scores among adults. That is absolutely great news because it's inexpensive, it's non-toxic, and not only does it help your brain, it helps get rid of arthritis pain and helps circulation. Overall, it's perfect. Also, from the University of Buffalo, they found the compound in red wine, which means grapes, decreases depression and anxiety. Yeah, one more reason to have. I wouldn't drink red wine. By the way, there is non-alcoholic red wine, but drink grape juice, all right, because that's what wine is made from, fermented grapes. So if you're taking probiotics, there's your fermentation, and you're taking grape juice or grape concentrate, you're getting resveratrol. And resveratrol is a wonder nutrient inside your body. 100 milligrams a day would be great. Depending upon if you have some condition like depression, anxiety, you might want to go to the 300 to 400 milligram a day range. But that's important for you, for depression, anxiety. Also, don't drink a lot of red wine if you're depressed, because that might make you more depressed. But the fennel is actually in the skin and the seeds of grapes, not the flesh. But resveratrol has strong antidepressant effects. And that's been shown not just at the University of Buffalo, but also China's Medical University has shown that as well. So one more reason to take something into your body that's good. Also, now it's shown that green spaces like parks and trees and grass are good for our mental health. There's a university in Australia called Wangan, and they had an observational study. They looked at how green space is associated with mental health. And some research has showed that living near more trees is very important for us. Now, they took a look at 47,000 city-dwelling adults in Australia and examined how living near different kinds of green space, tree canopies, grass, low-lying vegetation, flowers, actually helps us de-stress. And that's what the response was. And it made a big difference over a period of 6 years. From Penn State University, avocado seeds, those large seeds, contain compounds that reduce inflammation. Now, there's a really good way to have two compounds, both of which reduce inflammation, both of which are very good for us, both of which have healthy fats. One is good for your brain and your heart and circulation. The other is good for your brain, heart, and circulation. Avocados, including the pits, and cacao, which is chocolate. You throw the two together into a blender, add a little bit of, let's say, essential fatty acids or some liquid, and you make yourself a wonderful pudding. It's raw, it's organic, it's delicious, and it's a superfood. Avocados are a superfood. And it's good for turning off pain throughout your whole body. So yes, eat the pulp, and normally the seed is thrown away. But the universities of Pennsylvania, Penn State University, found the use of avocado seeds, which was very good. And this was published in the peer-reviewed journal Advances in Food Technology and Nutritional Sciences. And think of all the inflammation, diabetes, inflammation, Alzheimer's, Parkinson's, multiple sclerosis, inflammation, cancer, heart disease, inflammation. So we're all suffering from inflammation, and we need anti-inflammatories. And avocado, the seed, helps prevent that. From Graz University of Technology in Austria, one apple, just one single apple, carries roughly 100 million bacteria. Yeah. But that's a good thing. So how does that old saying go, 100 million bacteria a day will keep the doctor away? Sounds about right. A new study reveals that a typical 240-gram, that's a medium-sized apple, contains around 100 million bacteria, mostly in the seeds and skin. And while that may sound a bit off-putting at first, researchers say that when it comes to a gut bacteria, the more good bacteria, the better. Additionally, researchers at Graz University of Technology say that organic apples were found to contain even more diverse bacteria goodness than conventional apples, making them healthier, tastier, and better for the environment. And it's the fungi and the viruses in our food that end up transiently colonizing our gut. So that's important. But cooking kills most of those bacteria. So raw fruit and vegetables are important for good gut bacteria. From a major Samsung hospital in South Korea, high blood sugar may elevate the risk of pancreatic cancer. So for pre-diabetics and diabetics, that's about 100 million Americans, or about somewhere in the neighborhood of about 26% of the American population, you're at risk. So high blood sugar increases the risk of pancreatic cancer. And that means that the disease stops the work of healthy cells in the pancreas and aids their out-of-control growth. The findings of the Korea-based study were published in the Journal of Clinical Endocrinology and Metabolism. And the five-year survival rate for people with pancreatic cancer is only 9%, because the disease is so difficult to diagnose and so often not found until later stages, when the cancer is spread from the pancreas to other parts of the body. So this is one more reason: eat clean food, healthy food, lots of fruits and vegetables, and probiotics every day. Also, from the University of Illinois, you can get more cancer protection from your broccoli. Researchers have shown repeatedly that cruciferous vegetables fight cancer. What are we talking about? We're talking about broccoli, kale, cabbage, cauliflower, radishes, yeah, watercress, asparagus is good. And that protects your body. And why? Because they have a chemical called sulforaphane. It's a powerful compound and improves the liver's ability to detoxify carcinogens and other toxins. In fact, broccoli has been shown to kill the stem cells that make cancer immortal. And while broccoli is a rich source of sulforaphane, sprouting broccoli boosts sulforaphane substantially. 3-day-old broccoli sprouts contain 100 times higher levels of sulforaphane than a mature head of broccoli. Just an ounce of broccoli sprouts contains as much sulforaphane as 1.5 pounds of broccoli. So broccoli sprouts are the ticket to helping kill cancer stem cells. From Northwestern University, slower metabolism is associated with reduction in manifestation of harmful effects of mutants. Research described in a current issue of the association's publication showed that slower metabolism rate and a reduction of potentially damaging effects of genetic mutations. So the findings could help explain the link between calorie restriction, good, slowing the aging process. Mind you, calorie restriction slows your metabolism, hence you live a longer life by half. And by the way, my lecture yesterday, which you're all going to be able to see free, was on how to live a longer life and what adds to your life and what takes away from it. And it was a wonderful audience, a lot of healthy people in that audience, and a lot of people listen to this program for a long time. But when I asked them, are you reducing your caloric intake? A lot of people, well, what do you mean? Well, you can have a gigantic salad, I mean a bowl this big, and you would have a couple hundred calories. Or you can have some mashed potatoes and put butter in it, and you've got 500 calories. So the caloric density of a food is what determines whether you're meeting or exceeding your caloric needs per day. So we've got to get to where we are in tune. How much do I need in the way of caloric intake per day so I have the energy to do all that I need, but not excess calories? If you ate a perfect diet calorically, so you were in balance, but you added one slice of bread per day, that's it, one slice of bread per day, you would gain 9 pounds at the end of a year. So it's not difficult to add weight onto the body. And for women who are in postmenopause and men who are in postandropause, your hormones are out of balance. Therefore, you have to be even more concerned about restricting caloric intake and more interested in doing your exercise. So that makes a difference. So slow down your metabolism, live a longer life. All right? And when you're eating French fries, potato chips, hot dogs, hamburgers, steak, let me just give you the math on this. Let's just say that you go into a restaurant, and it's one of these restaurants you see that gives you a lot of meat. Let's say that you get a piece of meat, and for argument's sake, it's half, it's a pound, 16 ounces, but half that, or 8 ounces, is fat, and 8 ounces is protein. Now, it's 28.35 grams to an ounce. Let's round it off, make it simple, 28 grams to an ounce. So do the math, 8 times 28. All right? 8 times 28. Well, you're over 240 grams of protein per day. Now, I'm almost 6'2". My ideal weight is 185, but I'm training now, so my weight is around 175. I'm training for the World Games and some upcoming competition. But I'm taking in, all from plant foods, strict vegan, about 60 grams of protein a day, 20 in the morning with a liquid protein shake, and then 20 in the afternoon with my only one main meal, and then grazing throughout the day, and a little protein later. So that's for the whole day from all foods. If I take a snack, a grazing snack like edamame, which is delicious, I like the jalapeno edamame, one package generally contains about 9 grams of protein. It's very lightweight. The whole thing can fit in the palm of your hand, and you're getting no calories, ostensibly very little. You're getting 9 grams of high-quality protein and other nutrients. So you see, you can get your protein, and there's this myth that you're going to be weak if you don't eat animal proteins. That's a myth. One of the strongest men in the world is a vegan. Some of the greatest athletes in the world are vegan. Some of the athletes I work with and have raced with, Sam Skinner, vegan. Sid Howard, a vegan. How fast are the three of us? Well, out of about 100, I think it's around 120 teams, including the New York Roadrunners Club and the Eastside Striders, some great athletes, the three of us in a 10K relay won. So anyone who says that if you took all the awards and all the championships, all the world records, national records that the three of us have, it's well north of 1,000. We've never lost a race in 40 years. So the next time someone tries, well, you're going to be puny. None of us are puny. We're going to live a longer life, healthier life, because we're conscious of what our body needs. In fact, by eating that meat, you're slowing down the intestinal motility. You're oversaturating the entire intestinal tract with bacteria and putrefaction. That then kills off the good bacteria. So now you have a proliferation of harmful bacteria. You're also creating arachidonic acid, which is a very, very pro-inflammatory acid that can lead to gout and arthritis and pain flare-ups, even in the ankles and the feet. So, every time you eat an animal protein, you're hurting yourself. And everything is incremental. You won't eat one hamburger and have a heart attack. You won't smoke one cigarette and end up with emphysema or lung cancer. You won't drink one glass of alcohol and end up with cirrhosis of the liver. Now, take that 20, 30, 40 years forward, and you're dead. Right? That's how it works. Everything is cumulative, positive and negative. So that's why we want to slow down our metabolism, but speed up our exercise so that we can, well, so we can live a longer life. The concept is that slower and grow slower, and we want to live a longer. Caloric restriction is how you live a longer life, and that's good. And also, and that was, again, from the University of Graz in Austria. And it's boosting your cellular health with immortality herbs that they also found over there. Also, we have an herb called Angelica Kishi, K-E-I-S-K-E-I. It's a large medicinal herb native to Japan, and the Japanese consider it the plant of immortality because taking it as a medication can make older people look younger and feel young despite their age. And it's been used to prevent various illnesses in different areas of Asia. And scientists finally discovered that what makes this plant such a potent traditional medicine. In a study published in the peer-reviewed journal Nature Communications, a highly respected journal, researchers reported finding a compound in the plant that can boost cellular health by promoting cell regeneration. It's a flavonoid that helps cells get rid of damaged components by supporting a natural cleansing process known as autophagy, A-U-T-O-F-H-A-G-Y, and that's one of the most important parts of cellular cleansing. And for all of us in the health and health movement, we are big believers in detoxification. So we're going to take a brief break and come right back. And when we come back, I just want you to hear, before I go to my special investigative report on Wikipedia, and the article is posted now, it's called Wikipedia Skeptics Crucifixion of Deepak Chopra. Now, I haven't spoken to Deepak Chopra since, early 1970s when he called my office and was pestering Adria, my producer, great producer, by the way, for 12 years, if he could come to one of our weekend retreats in Grossinger's. And I didn't know who he was. And so I said, well, ask him what he believes in, what he's supporting, and let's take a look at some of his writings. So it was good. He was writing nice things, important things. So we invited him, but we had the heavyweights there, Linus Pauling, all these really top people in the field. But he gave a good lecture, and that was the last time I've spoken to him. So I'm not a friend. I don't like what he did with his career. I don't like his gross commercialization. I believe that if you were to ask him, did you take the wrong turn for a person coming from a strongly spiritual background into commodifying yourself? I think he would say yes. But so I want you to know, I'm no friend of Deepak Chopra. I'm going to be defending people I don't even like, but I feel we must defend them, just like freedom of speech. I may not like what you say, but I'm going to defend your right to say it. I can argue the issue with you. So we're going to have that in a moment. But I want you to hear this from Bill Clinton, because they're doing it again with 5G. They're doing it again with Monsanto and all the other Syngenta and all their other genetically modified crops, including what's in almost all of our bodies now, which is glyphosate, which is a known carcinogen. So they've been experimenting on us with electromagnetic pulses, with geoengineering and particulate matter from all those planes. They've been experimenting all along. So I got them back then, and I wrote the two original articles that I'm holding in my hand. Now, these are going to be posted. They're up on my website. And we posted them front and center so you can read them. I wrote these 25 years ago. So here's Bill Clinton.
Is a monumental document in more ways than one. But it is a very, very important piece of America's history, and it will shape America's future in ways that will make us a more honorable, more successful, and more ethical country. What this committee learned, I would like to review today with a little more detail than Dr. Faden said, because I think it must be engraved on our national memory. thousands of government-sponsored experiments did take place at hospitals, universities, and military bases around our nation. The goal was to understand the effects of radiation exposure on the human body. While most of the tests were ethical by any standards, some were unethical, not only by today's standards, but by the standards of the time in which they were conducted. They failed both the test of our national values and the test of humanity. Informed consent means your doctor tells you the risk of the treatment you are about to undergo. In too many cases, informed consent was withheld. Americans were kept in the dark about the effects of what was being done to them. The deception extended beyond the test subjects themselves to encompass their families and the American people as a whole. For these experiments were kept secret. And they were shrouded not for a compelling reason of national security, but for the simple fear of embarrassment. And that was wrong. So today, on behalf of another generation of American leaders and another generation of American citizens, the United States of America offers a sincere apology to those of our citizens who were subjected to these experiments, to their families, and to their communities. When the government does wrong, we have a moral responsibility to admit it. The duty we owe to one another to tell the truth.
Okay, good. Listen to what he just said. Hospitals, I exposed Sloan Kettering. I exposed the person there who was injecting live cancer cells into pregnant women, and they were being told it was vitamins. I exposed the hospital for the indigent over in Brooklyn where poor people were being treated, and they were injecting live cancer cells to see if they would get cancer. They were putting radiation on toast and feeding it to small children in hospitals. Read the article, you'll see what I exposed. I actually tracked down, I found one of the doctors, and he said I had no choice because I work for the government, and the government tells you what to do, you have to do it, or your career's over. So, he apologized for that, those experiments, but the government didn't apologize voluntarily. He didn't do anything voluntarily. He was forced to. Now, how much my articles played in that, I don't know. But they were a cover story on a national publication that sold about 5 million copies of the magazine. And I did a lot of media all over the place, including in Washington, D.C., where I was on the air down there for 36 years. So I did a whole series on PFW in Washington, MBAI in New York. So now I'm saying this, citizen journalist everywhere. You don't have to graduate from a Columbia School of Journalism to know how to look for the truth and write about it. In fact, frequently the individuals who do graduate and have a good background and are qualified frequently are compromised because they're political or ideological points of view. They refuse to expose an area where there's crimes against humanity because they don't want to be, in effect, helping the enemy or whoever is on the opposite side of that issue. 5G, that's a crime against humanity. Genetically engineering, a crime against humanity. Mandatory vaccinations, a crime against humanity. How can you have millions and millions of individuals, including highly qualified, highly educated men and women with PhDs and MDs, who take a look at the consequences after the fact and realize they have been used, their children used as human guinea pigs to make a profit for Big Pharma. But all of the agencies that are supposed to help us, the FDA is a criminal organization. The CDC, criminal organization. I wouldn't trust anyone from the Surgeon General to any member of Congress. I don't trust anyone in a position of power because I see what sociopaths they are and what people would do to sell their soul for a dollar. In this case, it's a lot of money. So why isn't someone apologizing for this? Because they're still profiting from it. So will it be any person working for the government? Never. If they are, they're a whistleblower, and now the government wants to go after any whistleblower, making it even more difficult, including journalists. The CIA is now In fact, I have this article today. It says this. This is just brand new today from Tech Dirty. It says the CIA wants to make it easier to jail journalists, and no one in Congress is stopping it from happening. So a criminal organization, isn't it interesting? The people who are involved in so many of these activities went to work for CNN and MSNBC. Since when do we in journalism ever allow someone who is involved in crimes against humanity to be a part of a legitimate newscasting organization? It's a shame. That's why I don't even turn on CNN, or I won't turn on MSNBC, because I wouldn't go into a public bathroom and look in a filled toilet expecting to see roses. So that's what I think of MSNBC and all of its journalists, and CNN and all of its journalists, and so many of the other places as well. I just wanted to show you, Bill Clinton apologized for something you all didn't know. Read the articles to catch up on it. I was the one who exposed all that. Now, we're going to take a break, and when we come back, we're going to go right into this. We're in the process of challenging the internets for censorship, for creating content that is biased. I may not agree with some of the political views of people who've been censored, but I agree that they should not have been censored. Now, Wikipedia, the skeptics on Wikipedia, crucified Deepak Chopra. And like they do with everyone, they don't allow him to change anything that's wrong about his bio. We're working on that. I have in the other room, I have a team of lawyers doing nothing every day, but working on what you all hear about in about within 2 weeks at a press conference in Washington, New York, Los Angeles, San Francisco. We're going after the big tech companies because they're engaged in, we believe, crimes against humanity. They're censoring any article that challenges anything the establishment is profiting from that is harmful. Your articles are not getting out. Your films are being taken off the internet and YouTube. So this is our way of still presenting the truth. Every day, tens of millions of Americans are ill, from cancer to dementia, cardiovascular disease, obesity, and diabetes, and mental disorders. As bad as this massive human suffering is, Americans also face, with uncertainty of any given treatment, will it work, will it not work? They don't know, nor does the physician in most cases. This creates additional anxiety. Will I live? Will I die? Will I ever get off these medications? However, the large majority of sick Americans have something in common. Their first course of action is to visit their primary care physician or go to a hospital with the belief that conventional orthodox medicine and its science is the only answer. The medical establishment and all of our federal health and state agencies confirm medical science has tried and perfected protocols. You don't need to go anywhere else. But none of these treatments involve the patient's beliefs, mental attitudes, and personal worldviews. In effect, a patient is perceived as a damaged car going into the shop for a mechanical repair. The medical regime that dominates conventional medical practice is unable to take into account that a person's own mind might have a critical role in the healing process. Evidence-based medicine claims there must be reproducible results, ideally founded upon placebo-controlled studies and a meta-analysis of peer-reviewed literature from respected institutions to conclude that a pharmaceutical treatment might be effective. Well, good luck with that. Aside from the numerous failures of medicine to meet these criteria, herein also lies modern medicine's cognitive disconnect. There are thousands, tens of thousands of studies that give evidence and of the credence to the benefits of body, mind, living, and medicine. Back in the 1970s, some of you would have heard on my program Dr. Herbert Benson, a Harvard professor who discovered the power of positive thinking on physical and mental health. But Professor Benson was not alone. There have been dozens of other physicians and scientists who have shown that negative emotions adversely affect our DNA and can turn off genetic expressions that trigger a disease. Conversely, directed positive thoughts can have an impact on DNA and facilitate healing. When American scientists visit foreign countries to study meditation and yoga and breathing and chanting and drumming and investigate whether there are measurable metrics to support therapeutic effects, they can be overwhelmed that there are multiple realities and therefore many roads to health and healing and truth. Then Wikipedia and Google come along and tell us it is all nonsense, it's all quackery. We are told not to believe our own experiences, not to believe our intuition or power of prayers or mental concentration. Instead, separate yourself and become an atheist. Only believe in reductionist scientism and place faith in the paradigm that only what has been manufactured into a pill can heal you. Clearly, as more Americans become distrustful of standardized pharmaceutical-based treatments and turn to alternative medical treatments, there is a clash of medical worldviews. Now, our research describes one of its victims, modern-day skeptics who dominate Wikipedia's content on non-conventional medicine and body-mind science and parapsychology have zero tolerance for theories that suggest your mind can directly influence your health and hence help in the treatment of your diseases. In fact, theories that human consciousness, which underlies our subjective experiences of the world, may be non-localized or independent and non-contingent on brain chemistry is anathema, according to skeptic scientific materialist views of reality. Now, although the religion of scientism is less than 100 years old and is now being fueled by the emergence of new atheism during the past couple decades, what we today call mind-body medicine goes back to at least the first millennium BC, if not earlier. In the East, meditation techniques to explore the nature of consciousness has been a 3,000-year scientific experiment. Its results have been reproduced innumerable times among the practitioners over the centuries, and the results are almost always the same for those who are the most accomplished in these psychosomatic and psycho-spiritual practices. The simple fact is that modern science knows far more about atoms and electrons and the Big Bang than it does about the human mind. They know nothing about the human spirit, because they don't believe in it, and they know nothing about consciousness. They are functionally illiterate about what really matters in life. And I want to underline, and with exclamation marks, really illiterate. Every new discovery in the neurosciences opens up new questions. The reduction opinion, fully embraced by skeptics and Wikipedia's Jimmy Wells, suggests the mind and consciousness are nothing more than the firings of neurons and secretions of neurotransmitters all taking place in the brain. Yet real neuroscience, by actual neuroscientists, has no means to explain subjective experience itself. In fact, skepticism in the new secular religion of scientism in general has been so habituated to only observing and measuring objective reality that subjective experience, which gives rise to intuition and precognition and discernment and insight into phenomena to discover meaning and the capacity of the conscious to have epiphanies and clairvoyant moments to direct and focus upon itself in order to affect the body's biological processes, are simply disregarded as delusions and nonsense. Any successful treatment due to non-conventional and body-mind protocols and therapies that skepticism cannot explain scientifically, which is practically everything, is simply attributed to the placebo effect. It does not require much thought to realize such an explanation is blatantly unscientific. The belief that the mind can cure the body's ailments, whether by the intervention of a god or a natural quality of the mind, albeit largely not understood, continues to be held by a large majority of Americans. 60% of American adults believe God supernaturally heals. You can argue yes or no, but that's what they believe. Clearly, there is no scientific doubt any longer that emotional stress can hinder the body's immune system. That is a scientific fact. And there are over 5,000 studies in the government's own National Institutes of Health database of peer-reviewed literature in medical papers that have studied meditation and yoga's effect on health. Today, the fact that the mind can reduce stress, thereby affecting the body's biochemistry, and relieve adverse emotional conditions is scientifically acceptable. Even skeptics, notably Sam Harris, accept this. But if this is true, then why not explore this body-mind relationship further and deeper in order to discover other mechanisms by which the mind can heal illnesses rather than just taking a pill? One of the pioneers for bringing body-mind science to the larger public's awareness is Dr. Deepak Chopra. Regardless of how you may perceive this leading popularizer of the now overly commercialized New Age movement, which I do not support, in his role as a highly accomplished medical doctor with a remarkable resume. Chopra has been instrumental in awakening Americans to the value of alternative and natural medicine, as well as to the importance of incorporating meditative or contemplative practices into our life regime for physical and mental well-being. Clearly, among the millions of people who have been influenced by Dr. Chopra and have been benefited from his books and lectures, he is an important pioneer in the advancement of a future medicine that will not solely rely upon the pharmaceutical industry. Among all the pioneers of non-conventional medicine, including Nobel laureates such as Linus Pauling and British physicist Brian Josephson, skeptic Wikipedia editors have been least kind to Deepak Chopra. If there is any question regarding skepticism's enormous influence over Wikipedia, reading Chopra's Wikipedia biography will dispel any doubts. Although Chopra is a highly trained medical physician in internal medicine who has taught at the medical schools Boston University, Harvard University, Tufts University, and later served as the chief of staff of the New England Memorial Hospital, you would not learn any of this from Wikipedia's introductory paragraphs about him. Nor, aside from his being a celebrity spiritual personality, would you learn on his biography that he continues to be a medical researcher conducting clinical trials and publishing in peer-reviewed medical literature. We found, I believe, 15 studies in the last year alone. Rather, he is simply introduced as, quote, Indian-born American author, public speaker, alternative medicine advocate, and a prominent figure in the New Age movement, end quote. That was his original Wikipedia biography back in 2003. It was only two sentences. Deepak Chopra, born 1947, is one of the most popular contemporary writers on alternative medicine and Ayurveda. A physician, he started off in the TM movement, but later branched off in his own. But a year later, it would appear that the skeptics moved in to his blog page. The anonymous editor, C. Starr, a now-retired Wikipedian and one of the earlier skeptic editors sabotaging non-conventional health pages, quoted Quackwatch founder Stephen Barrett, a national public relations voice speaking on behalf of toxic corporate products like tobacco and oil and pesticides and junk food, and of course pharmaceutical drugs, as an authoritative source for criticizing Chopra. Barrett has been a scientific consultant for skepticism's largest organization, the Center for Inquiry. Well, today Chopra's entry is the equivalent of a small pamphlet with 148 endnoted references. The references include many of the most prominent names in the who's who of directory of radical skeptic and new atheism movement, such as Stephen Barrett, Robert Carroll, and Jerry Coney, and Richard Dawkins, and David Gorski, Paul Kurtz, and Paul Offit. Aside from Dawkins, none of these individuals are common household names outside of the skepticism cult that they belong to. However, for Wikipedia editors, they are the authors of skepticism's gospels. they're the Bible, which are repeatedly referenced as authoritative sources on the encyclopedia's pages to discredit non-conventional mind-body medicine and to promulgate skepticism's doctrine. Each of these ideologues is highly biased and prejudiced to the extreme against everything outside the purview of a pharmaceutical-based medical practice. Unlike skeptics, Deepak Chopra and other investigators into the mind-body relationship are not afraid of scientific exploration discovery. In 2014, Chopra sponsored and led the Self-Directed Biological Transformative Study Initiative, a scientific trial that would measure the effects of meditation and yoga and emotional modification lifestyles on the microbiome in our body. This includes regular testing of the participants' RNA expression, telomere activity associated with cellular aging, and circulating protease activity, and metabolites, peptides, neurohormones associated with brain-body messaging. Have any of these other skeptics or their doctors, have any of these people ever written an article based upon original clinical study? No, not like this, but they're critical of it. To Chopra's credit, this is the kind of a research that should have been conducted decades ago. But the influence of skeptical thought throughout the medical establishments has prevented these kinds of trials from being funded and undertaken. It is interesting to note that compared to Chopra's main critics in the scientific community, he has published more peer-reviewed studies that investigate medicine beyond the limits of scientific materialism. Among the more recent studies published during the past 12 months, I'll just give you one. Prebiotic potential of culinary spices used to support digestion and bioabsorption. This is published in Evidence-Based Complementary and Alternative Medicine. He has all these articles published, but you wouldn't know that by looking at Wikipedia. You'd just think he was absolutely a quack reading Wikipedia, but he's done these double-blind placebo-controlled studies. Even one on the effects of stress and meditation on the immune system and human microbiome and epigenetics. Yet nowhere on Chopra's Wiki page is there any mention of his ongoing scientific research that has been published in mainstream scientific literature. In fact, one of Chopra's strongest attacks against Wikipedia's attacks against Chopra concerns his analogies drawn from modern quantum physics to explain mind-body relationships that may influence a healthy change in one's biology. So this is what we have. Now, I've only gone halfway through this article, but what we have done, we've looked at everything Chopra has written, and his books, his articles, and his background, and he's been on the right side of science and the right side of health and healing. They, on the other hand, let them bring forward all their cured patients. I'd like to meet them. I'd like to see them. I'd like to hear from them. Instead of criticizing people who are getting results they couldn't imagine. So read the entire article. This is just the beginning of us defending people. And Deepak Chopra doesn't even know that I'm defending him and writing this and broadcasting this. But download these articles and then send them out to as many people as you can. And that way you can see that we're taking on Wikipedia, we're taking on Google, we're taking on Facebook and other platforms that censor, demean, that try to destroy people's careers with no opportunity for a person to be able to fight back. Just a few program announcements. I'm not able to be there, but I want to mention there's going to be, tomorrow evening, there's going to be a showing of a film about 5G. And I need the person who told me about it, Les Jamieson, resend me an article, or just the address. I know it's down in the village, but it's a new documentary about 5G. I have my own show to do tomorrow evening, so I can't be there. But I want people in the audience who want to be really educated about 5G to be there, because it'll be a whole documentary shown plus a panel discussion. So I support that. Also, this coming Saturday, I will complete my current round of lectures and premieres by being in Woodstock. Right now and every day, we're heard on a radio station up in Woodstock. It is WIOF 104.1 FM, And I'm going to be lecturing at the Tinker Theater on 132 Tinker Street. And I want to thank Felicia Kaskic and the others who put this together. Now, if you want to make sure that it's not sold out, all of my lectures, all of my everything I do is sold out. I don't want you to come from, you know, Olive Branch or Poughkeepsie, Kingston, and not have a seat. Call Felicia at 845-679-6464. 845-679-6464. So you can join me this Saturday. It'll be a lot of fun. The people up in Woodstock, they're a hoot. It's like walking back in time. They're very casual, very laid back, but very concerned about important social and environmental issues. And that's what we're doing. We're providing you, the public, and all the activists, with the tools you need to challenge the corruption and malfeasance and premeditation of that malfeasance against big corporations and the government. And we are doing the scholarship, we're doing the research, and read the articles. By the way, read these two articles. There are two up there. I did two articles on the government secretly using human beings in America as human guinea pigs. And these, okay, I was just told that the address for tomorrow is, again, the Revolution Gallery, 224 Waverly Place. The Revolution Gallery, 224 Waverly Place, tomorrow evening, 7 o'clock. I want to thank you all. And tomorrow, for those of you who've had remarkable healing experiences, call in, share them with us. Like to hear it. We have a whole lot to talk about tomorrow. Tomorrow also, I'm going to try to deconstruct in lay language all the pieces to this Mueller testimony, to the almost 3 years of saying that Trump colluded with Russia. I'll explain it all from an honest, nonpartisan point of view. That's on tomorrow's show. Have a nice day, everyone.